brought to you in association with ThinkGeek. Stuff for smart masses. Broadcasting all over the world from cinemageekly.com, it's the Cinema Geekly Podcast with Anthony Lewis, Aaron De La Osa, Glenn Bove, and Cody Kelly.
For 20% off of literally everything, including sale items. So if there was ever a time to buy some stuff from ThinkGeek, this would be it indeed.
Absolutely.
The code is GEEKROAR, 20% off of literally everything on the website, including sale items. But yeah, use the banner on the Cinema Geekly website before you dive into that. It's Memorial Day weekend, so it's a busy weekend for pretty much everybody. So I'm just happy we managed to get everything in for the get everybody together for the podcast this week. I think times in the past we have not been able to get one out on Memorial weekend. So how are things going for you?
And many other weekends too. There was a time there in the start where it was a little sparse.
Did you have a good old fashioned American barbecue, Aaron?
Of course, man. I'm a goddamn veteran. That's what we do.
Cody, how about you, man?
I watched a lot of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia alone with my cats.
Damn it, that really brought down the tone of the show.
It was fun, though.
I got some hamburgers from Burger King. And
it was cool. Cats licked the cheese wrapper, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Glenn, it's Texas, so you guys are always – I remember, you can't say barbecue, you grill. I was going to ask if you grilled today, but you pretty much do that every day, right? That's like every breakfast, lunch, and dinner you guys are grilling?
I usually at least grill once a week.
There you go, man. Yeah. So including – did you get one in today, though?
Yes.
Of course, yes. As did everybody except for Cody, and now I feel bad. We all need to get together and have a Cinema Geekly cookout at Cody's place.
It was kind of similar to what Cody did. I had cats as well. The strays, you know, that come from – dumpster, but they weren't really welcomed.
Even more sad. That's more sad. Oh, son of a bitch. The week that was in TV and movie, we are going to talk about it, and we're going to resist until later on in the show to talk about X-Men Days of Future Past.
I want to talk
about it, but there was a lot of other good shit to talk about. A ton of it. Guardians of the Galaxy official trailer was released very shortly after the last podcast was released. Aaron, what were your thoughts on this trailer? We finally got to hear Groot. We finally really got to hear some in-movie dialogue from Rocket. What were your thoughts?
I'm still trying to pick up the pieces of my brain because they've just exploded everywhere. from start to finish, it was 2 minutes and 47 seconds of some of the best Marvel conversion from source material to screen. I think, you know, we've been shown so far. I'm really excited to see what the full movie is going to be like. In my opinion, it looks like a home run already.
Yeah, I won't lie. I got a little giddy when I saw that they included Nowhere in the movie. Yep. And for people who don't know what that is, it is essentially, without going too deep into it, a gigantic space alien's cranium, a skull that was converted into a spaceport, as best I can tell. And it looked awesome here, because apparently in the comics it's just the head. Here there was a head, and you could see a spinal cord just kind of drifting off into a nebula. It looked fantastic. But Vin Diesel's Groot sounded kind of how I imagined it would sound. I was happy with that.
Sounded a lot like Vin Diesel talking.
And I'm thinking, indeed. In fact, I think he used more syllables than normal as well, which is, you know, that's an upgrade for him.
I liked it. You know, it's definitely telling that he's going to give the version of I Am Groot depending upon what he's supposed to be feeling in the scene. So it's not just going to be, you know, it wasn't just one, like, Hulk smash from, you know, the Hulk movie. It's going to be all throughout. So it's
right. I think if he was going to say anything else, they may have actually shown it in the trailer. I think by having him just say I Am Groot kind of tells you that, you know, that's going to be all he says throughout the movie. So
that's the way it should be.
Brad, what did you think of what Bradley Cooper is adding to Rocket?
I like it. It's not quite what they're doing in the new Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon as far as with him having sort of a Brooklyn accent, and he's definitely not going to be Cockney, you know, much to my chagrin. But it's not bad. I mean, they could have picked a lot worse people for it. You know, Bradley Cooper definitely brings a name to the franchise, and, you know, it's fitting from what I've seen. Like, it doesn't feel out of place. So, you know, they could have gone a lot worse.
Cody, we got to see a raccoon grab his balls. What did you think of this trailer?
It's kind of hard to remember most of it now because it's been so long since I watched it. But
he did grab his balls. I can confirm.
Yeah,
that.
I remember that. It looks like I said. I don't know much about that particular group of people.
Right.
But it looks really fun, and just from the little, you know, the little bits that we've seen, I'm interested in it, and I'm going to go see it. So.
Oh, by the way, I should add, I love the fact that they used Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum in the trailer.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Oh, I love all that. I see so many people that are like, the music in these trailers suck. And I'm like, oh my God, these people were born in the mid to late 90s, weren't they?
Yeah, these are still children right now.
I'm like, oh my God, I am so old. Glenn, what do you think of your namesake in this movie? We got to see Glenn Close for a little bit.
Yeah, I forgot she was going to be in it, and I saw her, and I'm like, what the? She's not dead?
No. There were no puppies. This time she's surrounded by a raccoon, so it's always animals with this lady.
Seriously, but it's not bunnies, man. It's something else.
No, I really, like you said with her, I always forgot she was in it, and then I remember reading, like, how she said she only agreed to do this movie so she could do movies she actually wanted to do. She just wanted a paycheck. Let's hope she doesn't pull a Natalie Portman and tries, which I think, you know, lady in her stature, she'll try.
Yeah.
She probably doesn't have to try because she is that good.
Exactly.
I mean, it looks really good. I mean, I've always been a fan of Bradley Cooper, so I wasn't really worried about that. Mm-hmm. And I think the way it goes, it leaves you wanting more, and that's the whole point of a trailer, so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It looked great. We saw a little bit of Lee Pace, who's the villain, and the male villain, because Karen Gillan described herself as the female villain in the movie. So we got to see a little bit of Lee Pace.
Oh, God. As Ronan, the
accuser. Yeah, there was one more thing. Oh, yes, of course. Peter Quill's tape deck, which I was fascinated by. If anybody freeze frames this, like in the 1080p thing, you can just see, like, all the awesome elf stickers he has on this tape deck. And he's got an elf baseball card, and I'm like, oh my God, I had this shit when I was a kid.
You remember the elf puppets they gave away with the records at Pizza Hut?
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
Dude, I had, like, a life-sized elf stuffed doll thing.
So, yeah, I'm already associated with Peter Quill already. I'm already sympathetic to this man's character. He's like, he likes elves, and so do I. Yeah, right. I'm in for sure. Shut up, Glenn. What is this elf you speak of?
Let's just say you wouldn't get along with my cats.
It cleverly stands for alien life form. Aaron, tell us about this. Tell us about this deal with Mark Millar that we've got up on the website right now.
Oh, well, that I had a pretty exciting weekend.
Yeah, tell us about all this.
His new comic book project, MPH, you know, it's based in Detroit. It's about a group of inner city kids. They come across a street drug that gives you super speed. when you take it. And he had just randomly sent out like a blind item tweet looking for people in the like of what we do in the Michigan area.
Yeah.
So I tweeted him. He DM'd me like instantly and he gave me his email address and we emailed back and forth for a few days, you know, kind of what he was looking for. So, you know, kind of did him a solid and put the article up on the site. I mean, from speaking to him, as I said in the article, his passion is apparent. Like he really feels that he's helping to change and shed light on, you know, everything horrible that's going on in our country, especially in Detroit. You know, it was one of the premier cities in our country, you know, for so long. And now it's like a war zone. I mean, it's Gotham, for Christ's sake. I mean, you know, that they needed to go to a complete shithouse area and, you know, they picked Detroit. I mean, so it definitely, and the fact that he sent a copy to you know, almost everyone essentially in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. The president, he made waves.
Yeah.
For
the
that,
president.
Yeah.
I really feel, you know, he's passionate about wanting to help and wanting to change and wanting to bring light, you know, to these issues. And it especially hits home for us because so many of us, here at Cinema Geekly are in or from Michigan
right.
in one way or another. So it, you know, of course I wanted to help like immediately. Plus, I mean, you know, he's Mark Millar. He's responsible for some of the most iconic comic book characters and runs, I mean, ever, in my opinion. So I looked at the chance to help him, and he said that when they're getting ready to go to work on the movie, he hopes to talk to me again. So hopefully we can network this bitch, and eventually I'll make him my best friend.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. Absolutely. And
I would highly recommend anyone check out MPH. The first issue just came out this week. It is really, really good. The artwork is phenomenal. The story itself, I mean, it is what it is. It's the tone of a group of kids from Detroit. I mean, right. anyone who's ever been to Detroit and around, you know, the people of Detroit, you can read the comic book. You're going to feel just like you're sitting right in the middle of the city. So I definitely like it.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the readout, it's on the website. Aaron
yes.
put together a Dan O'Neill-esque length article is really.
I mean, I'd like to think, you know, I'm better than Dan, but you know.
we will talk about. Aaron did post the post credit scene for X-Men: Days of Future Past. It is now down, but we will talk about it when
it's
we start.
Down. The movie's out. And they took it down.
Yeah, they took it down. And they will. But we will in fact talk about it a little bit. Near the end. Let me just say, Aaron, did you like it? Did you like the tease that they did at the end?
I did. I did like the tease they showed at the end.
Okay. Some of the big news this week, some Batman-related stuff. They finally announced after all this time that Batman versus Superman is actually the name of the movie, but they added a subtitle and revealed the logo. Do you think Batman versus Superman was always going to be the title, or do you think just so many people referred to it as that for so long, they just like, fuck it, let's just keep it as Batman. It's Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, which I believe is hinting towards some sort of team movie, Aaron.
Yeah, some sort of a membership, a league, if you would.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Something.
A League of Avengers or something like that. That the Justice Avengers, something like
if
that.
If they called them the Justice League of Avengers, I think fucking Marvel. That might incite a riot in between the
yeah.
geek.
If you thought Marvel had balls for doing a movie with an animated raccoon,
right.
DC would take the giant balls award for calling it the Justice League of Avengers or whatever. So what do you think? What do you think of the name? What do you think of the logo?
The logo I like. I mean, it's the Man of Steel logo we've seen. It's the Jim Lee Batman logo, and everything we've heard from Kevin Smith about the color picture he saw the Batman suit. I mean, we know the color scheme already, so it's very fitting with what they're doing with Batman's suit. I'm sold on the logo and the tagline "Dawn of Justice." I mean, they had to do something because of all the rumors and confirmations we've heard about cameos from other heroes. I mean, they had to do a nod to it. So Dawn of Justice, I mean, it's a good tag, but it's like every fucking movie that's coming out now all has a tag. I mean, you know, Age yeah. of Ultron, you got Transformers with Age of Extinction. I mean, you got, you know, these guys and Dawn of Justice, the Planet of the Apes, you know, the dawn of everything. It's just, Jesus, it's enough with the taglines already, guys. Just call it, you know, Iron Man 4 and just leave it at that.
Cody, yeah, what did you think? I mean, Kevin Smith, and to Aaron's point, Kevin Smith did say, without saying anything essentially. I mean, he did give it away. He's just like, look, people are talking about what the suit looks like because it was a monochrome picture. He's like, I believe he said, you know, it's like the second book or whatever in the Dark Knight Returns or whatever. He's like, it looks exactly like that suit. So that's the color scheme. What do you think, Cody?
I think it was probably always going to be Batman versus Superman to an extent, just because, you put that up on a poster, people are going to automatically be interested in it just based on the name.
Agreed. Yeah.
I think they could have left it at that and it would have been just fine. Yeah. But I think Dawn of Justice is also, you know, a good way to hook people in and tease them a little bit about what's to come. So
right. That's in there for the people who didn't quite get that this was leading into a Justice League movie. It's there. It's essentially the streamers tied to an air conditioner so you know that the air is blowing.
Yeah, but I think they nailed it. I mean, it's pretty. I think it sounds pretty cool.
Okay. Glenn, what are you thinking of what they've revealed thus far?
I think it was always going to be called that because if you remember a little old movie that came out a few years ago called I Am Legend.
Yes.
And they have on a giant ass poster.
Oh, they did.
Batman versus Superman coming. I don't remember what year it was.
I think it was 2014 or something like
which
that.
Which is pretty damn close to what they have.
Right.
And also a fun fact with that movie is also the first trailer they showed for The Dark Knight.
That's
so,
true.
So I think they've always kind
of
hinted at
semicolon Dawn of Yawning.
Oh,
Legend should have been
called. I didn't say it was good. I said it was in there. It's definitely not good. How can you get bored in a movie that's not even an hour and a half long? Anyways, so with the Dawn of Justice, it makes sense for, you know, all those people who just gonna shove popcorn in their face, you know, who just want, you know, to be spoon-fed every bit of information because they're too stupid to figure it out for themselves. Mm-hmm. Just like in Godzilla, how, oh, he's the EOD because, well, that's what the movie needs. Anyways, yeah.
But did you see his six-pack? Crazy.
Video game news. It's also Batman-related. They released the quote-unquote gameplay trailer for Batman Arkham Knight. I say quote-unquote gameplay because I think there was literally about 10 seconds of real gameplay and the rest appeared to be in-game cutscenes, you know, that were made with the, you know, the engine. So I guess that means it's in-game, I suppose. But, you know, if you know much about video gaming, you know that even though they do the cutscenes in the game engine, they always look better than the actual gameplay because they don't have to worry about any of the complexities that come with the actual gameplay. So the cutscenes always look better. So I hate it when they call it a gameplay footage and then show a bunch of cutscenes, but at least it's all stuff that you will see in the game. What did you think, Glenn? Looking good?
Yeah. I mean, as Cody and I talked about in our little, Side B podcast, I am very much looking forward to this game. They showed us a lot more, especially stuff. The deal with Arkham Knight at the end was pretty badass.
Yes.
And E3 is right around the corner, so that's when we'll actually start seeing gameplay. And
yes,
if it's any indication, except for the last one, because Rock said he didn't make it, they always bring a great presentation for their game. So I'm very much so excited. There's certain things I just hope they introduce into it and that not so many open-ended questions they left in Arkham City will go awry. I don't want it to be like Lost where they're kind of like, fuck it. Let's just focus on one thing at the end, even though they gave us 5 years of unanswered questions. So hopefully some things are resolved or at least brought to light in this game.
I agree. The it looks so far it looks like it might be even more of an open world game than Arkham City was, and Arkham City felt kind of open world, and it looks like I get the feeling this is going to be even more.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you're supposed to be able to drive around everywhere.
Yeah,
so.
I was going to say, like, in the vein of like GTA or Watch Dogs or something like that, where they give you these open that open world feeling. So that could be really cool. Cody, what are you thinking? What are you thinking of the villain? The villain is fresh for this game, right? Rocksteady created it.
Well, me and Glenn kind of speculated about who we might think it might end up being.
He looked like Iron Batman.
Yeah,
in the trailer.
And I think based on that newest trailer that we just saw, I'm kind of thinking it's not going to be what me and Glenn had talked about.
Okay, so what was the theory you guys had?
We just we were thinking based on the way he looks and some of the colors and everything, it might be Jason Todd.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
That'd be but, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm not sure if I
with the way his voice is. Yes.
I've heard people there's a lot of people that seem to vehemently think that it's a clone of Bruce Wayne. Like it's a Batman clone of some sort, but there are a lot of people that seem to vehemently think this. But that feels kind of obvious, doesn't it? A little bit, like
yeah, I don't
Batman's greatest foe is himself.
Well, I think like obviously it's got to be someone we know, or they wouldn't hide the face and be secret about it. Like
right.
It has to be like the character or the bad guy name may be new, but it's got to be someone that's established already in Batman mythos. Because why would you have all the secrecy if it wasn't based on somebody else?
Aaron, what are the odds that it is Alfred? No,
personally, what I'm hoping for is when you take the helmet off, it's Christian Bale. He'll be the Nolanverse Batman, and he somehow escaped into this universe. And you know, once you take the helmet off, then he gets all super grappling on you. Really breaks it down.
But I think the trailer and the gameplay, even though the actual gameplay was, like you said, kind of small, it looks fantastic. I mean, this is the main reason why I'm going to buy an Xbox One. So. I mean, all these Batman games to me have been really, really good.
You know, I'm just going to go out on a ledge. I'm going to say it's Humpty Dumpty. That's me. No?
Well, he's a little too disfigured to be in that kind of suit. So,
well, come on. You never know. It could.
I mean, he could very well have made it.
Kite That's Man? Could it be Kite Man?
Now you're just being a jerk.
I'm sorry. About this before, but I think another good possibility may be Jean-Paul Valley. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they haven't really referenced him too much on the other games, but he'd be another good candidate too because it kind of fits that story.
Well, they have you do the Nightfall mission, I mean, as a DLC on Arkham Origins, so you already play him in Arkham Origins, so I don't know how well that, if it was just like its own thing or actually tied into the game or not. But
talking about Azrael.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. One of them. Not the one that was in Arkham City. That's a different Azrael.
Gotcha.
That guy's Michael something another.
Michael Lane, yeah.
I haven't played that yet, and I didn't even know about it, so my bad.
He's in there. let's move on. Let me see here. We are pondering, everybody, especially Aaron, as to whether or not Jessica Jones for the Netflix show has been cast. What are you thinking on this? You kind of went CSI a little bit here for us, or, and did some.
I think she has been. I think we got her.
Okay, so who are we talking about here?
It's a young lady. Her name is Eden Scher. She's from the middle. She plays a kid who's got super, gigantic braces, just like an awkward teen.
Right, right, right.
But, in reality, she's 22. I mean, so she definitely looks younger than what she is, so they can play into the origins. I don't know how much of her origins exactly they can do, given that she was pretty heavily involved with Peter Parker.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they're going to dance around that. But essentially, I did some more digging on this, and she had tweeted out a picture of her. No, I'm sorry. Hang on, let me pull that up real quick. You can edit this out, right?
No, I cannot.
Oh, shit.
Wait, what were you going for? What was it that you
were... The picture with her next to Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
The picture that Marvel tweeted out of her right next to Spider-Man, I think was all very telling, because they typically don't tweet out pictures of people at Marvel who are picking up comic books unless it's for a reason. And given the fact that her show was on ABC, it's not being picked up for another season, or they don't know yet. And essentially when that break is going to happen should be about the time frame where they're getting ready to start production on the Netflix Marvel shows. So, I mean, and given that everybody falls under the Disney umbrella, I think we got a good shot at finding her.
Given her original tweet stating, went to Marvel offices at noon for a 15-minute meeting, 3 hours and 80 pounds of issues later, I am paralyzed from excitement.
Yep.
So that tells me she may
sounds like research.
Possibly. Mayhaps.
And I mean, and there's other theories online. People are saying she could be a minor character in Daredevil and a couple other shows. But I mean, I don't think a minor character. They're not going to give her 80 pounds of comp. You know what I mean? And I don't think that I don't feel that they would tweet out a picture of someone who's just going to be a background character essentially. So it's, I don't know. I think the evidence is very telling. Or maybe she's just kind of working this all up in Diesel. And she just happened to be there to get some comics. So
oh, absolutely. And yeah. As we all know, Vin Diesel never ended up working for Marvel. So,
right. I still say there's a shot that guy ends up being Thanos.
I mean, it's not impossible. I mean, he's just a voice. I mean, John Rhys-Davies right. was two voices, or he was, you know, two characters in Lord of the Rings. So Benedict Cumberbatch is two characters in the Hobbit movies. So, you know, why the hell not? Yeah. You never really see Diesel's face, really, although I'm positive that Groot was modeled after Vin Diesel because I see Vin Diesel's face in the face of Groot. Maybe
just
Vin Diesel just
looks like a shark.
Yeah, maybe Vin Diesel just normally looks that wooden and shit. But I could see it in there. Let's talk about some possibly upsetting news, but we'll see how it ends up going. It was announced that Edgar Wright is no longer going to be directing Ant-Man due to quote-unquote creative differences. And obviously, we'll probably never get some sort of official statement as to what those differences were. But, you know, that's all. When they say creative differences, that usually means it's code for something. They claim that the split is amicable and et cetera, et cetera. Although I can't imagine it was easy for Edgar Wright because I believe he's been involved in this project since, 2006 or something? Early.
He first approached Marvel about doing the movie. He pitched them on it. They had no intention.
Yeah, he was.
Nor did they know that, you know, it was going to blow up like this. Yeah, he was passionate about it. This has been something he's been driving home forever.
Right. This was before the first Iron Man movie, I believe. Right. That came out in 2008 or something like that, so. Yeah, he's been with it for a really long time, so I'm sure it is not, you know, as easy as, you know, oh, well, I guess you'll go your way and I'll go mine. I mean, he's been attached for a long time, so I'm sure this sucks, but,
yeah.
Your reasoning, what you thought was the possibility behind all this, that seems to ring the most true. So what was your thought on why he's departing the movie?
Well, as you touched on, since he's been developing this thing since 2006, I think in my mind, what they could have done is they approached him telling him, like, you know, the tone of the movie has to fit the tone of Phase 3. So it's got to be more like this. You got to make reference to these, you know, people, these kind of things. And I mean, this right. has been his baby, you know, for 8 years. I mean, you know, a passion project. And I could see him not wanting to change it. And essentially, you know, ultimately, it's Disney and Marvel's show. So
absolutely. Yeah.
You
know,
see you later. I mean, they've done this with actors. I mean, Edward Norton, for Christ's sake, yeah. they had him as Bruce Banner. And, you know, he felt the tone of the movie should have been one way. They disagreed, and, you know, and he got the hell out of Dodge. So no one is safe. You're going to go with the House of Mouse, or you're going to go home.
Absolutely. Glenn, what are you thinking of the departure? I mean, do you think that's probably what it is? I mean, because as we stated, he was attached to this before there was even the concept of a Phase 1, let alone, you know, a Phase 3 of Marvel movies. So is that the most plausible reason why he's not hanging around?
Yeah, I would say probably has to do something with rewrites. And like you said, he's been along with it so long, he, you know, maybe just be an issue of pride being like, right, look, right. I want to do this from the beginning. Now, why should I have to redo this to try and fit to this scheme? Maybe the way I have the movie written, it could work anyways. You should work around it. I mean, I'm not saying he's, you know, he could be that kind of jerk, but
right.
It's a possibility. Like you said, it's his pet project.
Right.
But, I mean, though, I'm sure they'll find somebody capable. It just kind of sucks because, you know, they've picked right. some interesting directors, and if they don't pick interesting absolutely. Directors, they pick directors who haven't done anything on this scale,
right.
Which is good and bad. So it's just kind of a shame because it definitely could have been like the next Guardians, just something that had its own little tone that didn't need to fit into anything. So
I mean,
just look at the little teaser he shot.
Oh, absolutely! It was fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. Cody, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, the story I read was pretty much similar to, it was like a combination of both what Aaron Englund said, mm-hmm. where like he had his stuff together and Marvel's having him do a bunch of rewrites. And then Marvel had some Marvel people write a script, and it was just completely like butchering everything that he had worked on up to that point. So right. I don't know. I think it's a bummer because, you know, he's obviously very invested Absolutely. Into that character and making a good movie. So I don't think they're going to be able to find somebody who will probably have as much passion as he had for it.
Right.
So I think ultimately, yeah, it'll hurt the movie, which sucks.
I'm torn because I get that there are people on both sides of the argument, and I always tend to fall into the middle of the argument. I love Edgar Wright so much. I mean, I love everything he's, you know, maybe there's something out there he's done that I haven't seen yet. I think all I've seen are the Cornetto movies, Scott Pilgrim and Spaced. I don't know if he's done stuff outside of that.
Might be about it.
And I've loved all of it thoroughly. I'm just a big fan of his work, and anytime I've ever listened to him talk or do anything, he seems like the nicest guy ever. And there are a lot of people that are out there that are like, fuck Marvel! Fuck them up their ass! And it's like, but I see both sides of the issue. You know, as we stated, he started before there was even the concept of this phase. Like, I'm sure when they started that first Iron Man movie, they weren't like, okay, and then we're going to move on to Thor, and then we're going to have an Avengers movie. Oh, and then we're going to do Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, no way were they thinking any of that shit when they started with the first Iron Man movie. So, yeah, but obviously things changed drastically, and, you know, they are now, you know, using the intermediary movies as vehicles to the Avengers, which is fine. They're not doing a shitty job of it where they don't feel like, you know, this is just a placeholder until the Avengers. They don't feel like that at all. So in that regard, they're doing a great job, but that's essentially what they kind of are. They're not placeholder movies, but they are building towards the Avengers, and I think they want all of their movies to do that. And, you know, if his Ant-Man movie was, you know, and they may be shooting for a different type of tone in Phase 3. There's just so many things. And this is just one of those problems that comes with, you know, I would be more on Edgar Wright's side if this was, say, an original concept that he has come up with on his own that the studio wants to fuck with. But it's a known property that's owned by Marvel and, you know, et cetera. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's their toy. So yeah, I fall in the middle. It sucks. I think they will find somebody who will meet their vision, and I'm sure it will be a good movie, because they have not disappointed so far. But at the same time, I love Edgar Wright, and it sucks that he's not around for that. So yeah, that's tough. But you know, I think it'll be okay at the end of the day. And speaking of, there's another one of these stories, and we were talking about Jessica Jones earlier, but this time it was revolving around Daredevil. The other one of the other Netflix shows that they're doing, and they announced that this is not the same situation. They're not separating Drew Goddard from the show like they are Edgar Wright from this movie, but he's going on to handle the Sinister Six stuff. And instead, they are apparently he's maintaining the title of executive producer, but is essentially just going to be a consultant on the show because he's going to be focusing on the Sinister Six stuff, which means I've learned that consultant is Hollywood jargon for nobody of importance. George Lucas is an executive consultant on Star Wars, I believe, and I think they just pretend that their phone is on vibrate when he calls them, is my guess.
I think he just has a title so he can show up and for craft services.
Glenn, instead of Drew Goddard, the showrunner is Stephen DeKnight, who has worked closely with Joss Whedon in the past on Buffy, Angel, Dollhouse, and he was the showrunner for Spartacus on Stars for 3 seasons. Are you aware of this man's work on Buffy and Angel?
Yes.
Oh, you're like, and those were the lean years.
No, he actually... Okay, the thing is, like, I don't think tone and the show is going to change at all, because right. Him and Drew Goddard actually were writing partners on Buffy and Angel, mainly on the Angel stuff. They wrote a lot of episodes together. And with the Buffy, I mean, he wrote one of the most important episodes, and it's the one where Tara, Willow's girlfriend, gets killed by Warren with a gun, which is like the first time ever in the show someone was killed by a weapon that wasn't like magical.
Whoa,
or
spoilers, Jesus.
Oh, well, it's like season 6 and the show was out, but I'm working at 10 years ago.
Man, I was just getting ready to start watching it too. Now I know about Willow's girlfriend. Jesus.
That's weird. Window. I thought we were talking about Daredevil.
Well, we're talking about the guy who's running the show now.
I'm giving a backstory. But so anyways, like, I don't think anything like that'll change. And Spartacus was pretty good. I mean, it was, you know, it was porn. But
well, I mean, it was boobs.
But yeah, I'm not too worried about that. But Marvel is known, not so much now because of, you know, Disney being behind them, but they've always been known as being very cheap as far as the talent they hire and what they're willing to deal with. I know in the past, especially starting out, they were very, very cutthroat on a lot of budgeting. So they've been known to be a pain in the ass.
Cody, do you have any thoughts on the change of direction? Well, it's not really a change of direction, really. It's just a change at the helm of the show of Daredevil. Do you think this is going to really do anything different for the show based on what you've heard Glenn talk about?
Probably not. I mean, I'm not really familiar with that guy's work, but just those shows that you mentioned that he was working on, you know, those were successful shows. So
absolutely right.
He's got a track record, so hopefully he brings that, you know, to the table when he comes to make this one.
Absolutely.
I just want a good Daredevil show.
Aaron, are you in the same boat as Cody?
I don't really think it's going to matter at all. I'd be more concerned if it was another, you know, Edgar Wright situation as opposed to him just saying, like, no, I really just don't have any time. So I'm not really too worried about it. It's not like they were getting ready to go in production with a cast in place and all that on this show like they were for Ant-Man.
Absolutely. Let me see here. We're going to talk about X-Men in a second real quick, but a couple of things I do want to mention before we get going. We've made it even easier for people to help us out support-wise. You know about Amazon, you know about ThinkGeek, but we added a third affiliate to the growing ranks here over at Cinema Geekly. We added Fandango, the movie ticket place. I know a ton of people who buy movies for this place. I have never actually done it. Maybe I should start. but I know a ton of people who did. So I'm like, all right, well, let's see if we can get a hookup with these guys. And we have. And it kind of works the same way everything else does. You can just buy your tickets via our website through the Fandango banner. And we get money for everything you buy through there, by the way. Every ticket sold, we get money. If you buy gift cards or anything like that, well, I'm segueing right in there, Aaron, aren't I?
You're working it up.
If you get a gift card through there. First, let's do it this way. I've made it real easy for people to help us out. Go to cinemageekly.com/support, and that is literally the easiest way. It's one page right there, and it gives you all the necessary links, all the places we are working with that you can shop through these people and help us out and keep the website. It's always going to be free, but it's gonna help with the out of pocket expenses a little bit to keep it that way. One of the things we're doing right away with Fandango is we're going to run a contest, and the winner of this contest is going to get a $25 gift card to use on Fandango, which is awesome. I'm not sure, Glenn, I don't know how the ticket prices vary there. Do you often go by yourself to the movies? What are the ticket prices? How many tickets could you get for $25? I'm guessing, you know, three or four movies, right?
It kind of depends. Today, like, for two tickets, it was only $11.50. And it was matinee, so it wasn't too bad.
$25 gift card. So what we're going to do, Cody, Aaron, and Glenn have graciously volunteered to partake in a game of movie knowledge that will occur next week on the podcast. And so that means there are three slots open. If you are interested in getting this gift certificate, the first three people to shoot us an email at info@cinemageekly.com will be automatically given a shot at that $25 gift card. And also, by the way, the support page, I already mentioned, at cinemageekly.com/support. Absolutely, positively, no ad blockers. This is like the 14th person I've responded to in the last couple of days. The Facebook page alone, I think, got, you know, a little over 300 or so views in and of itself. And a lot of people, believe it or not, you guys, since I put that up on May 19th. And since then, through Fandango, through ThinkGeek, and through Amazon combined, I think listeners spent around $300 combined since
May. Wow.
So
that's awesome.
That is freaking
great. Thank you, guys.
I mean, we don't get a ton. I think that rounds out maybe altogether to us maybe getting $30 or $40, but that helps, man. That helps with the out-of-pocket expenses. So feel free, man. Shop to your heart's content. I've gotten a lot of people that have said, I go to the page and nothing appears, and that is likely because you have ad blockers. And I hate saying it because I fucking hate ads too, but they're not pop-up ads. They are safe. They are clean. They are straight from literally the code is straight from the businesses themselves. And they are trustworthy places of business, obviously. So yeah, and that's all they are. They're just image banners. So you just have to disable your ad blockers for that specific page if that's all you want to do. You don't even have to do it for the whole site, just that specific page, and everything will show up just fine. There will be no harm caused to you at all. That's a guarantee. So do not worry about it and stop sending me emails about it. hopefully that will work. I don't know if that's going to work, but hopefully it will. Let's talk about X-Men Days of Future Past. Dan O'Neill has a review for it up on the website. He loved it. I wrote a review for it earlier today. I liked it more than average. And Glenn, you saw it today too. What score would you give it? We've already maxed out on our review quota. So what score would you have given it?
I probably would have given it, I probably like what you did, like 3.5 to 4, like 3.75. If we ever did that, it would probably be what I'd give it. Cause it was, there's a lot of good moments, but, I couldn't, as we talked about before, I couldn't really kind of get into it. So I feel like the things I lost was not so much the movie's fault as it was the audience's fault.
Okay. Well, hold on. We'll talk about that real quick. I want to mention that this movie is for three people. There are three audiences for this movie, I think. There's the audience of people who want to go to this movie because they casually like the X-Men and they have enjoyed previous movies and they just want to see a movie with X-Men in the title with these characters in it. Then there are people who really love the X-Men and give a shit about continuity and canon. And then there is the group of people that feel the same way as the second group of people, and they're hoping that they completely and utterly obliterate all of the previous canon and continuity. This movie will, in fact, work out for groups number one and group number three, and not so much for group number two.
Oh, there's a fourth group.
Oh, what's the fourth group, sir?
Awful, awful, disgusting children.
This movie is also for them. So obviously there's going to be some heavy spoilers in here as well. So if you're not interested in that, feel free to lower the volume.
I want to hear more about the disgusting children.
Yeah, Glenn, unfortunately, he had my experience that I had at Godzilla last week with annoying kids. And apparently Glenn had a very similar experience when he went to see the X-Men picture. So, which blows, of course. Let's tackle the big thing first, which
the timeline.
Oh yeah, this is, if anything, this is a fascinating film about how they dealt with the timeline.
I don't really know that you saying they dealt with it is appropriate or not.
Oh, they definitely
ignored.
They definitely dealt with it in a very interesting way. Here's, based on what I can gather, here are the movies before going into this, when frame one of this film started, the movies that count are X-Men, X2, about 3 seconds of X3.
The ending?
Yeah, First Class, portions of The Wolverine, and some portions of Origins. At the end of this movie, here is now what the continuity is. All flashbacks to Wolverine's past in X-Men Origins Wolverine, X-Men First Class, and all of the events that took place in the past in this movie. And everything else has been thoroughly erased from history. None of it exists anymore.
X-Men. Oh, and William Stryker stuff in X2.
Right. Well, I mean, all of X.
Yeah, for some fucking. Let's talk about this goddamn quantum leaper.
Well, no. I mean, like at the end of this movie, X2 doesn't exist in it. That timeline, that's all been erased. So none of that stuff even happened.
But then of Origins too. It's, oh my god. Oh, ooh, I need some thumbs. This is.
He just said the flashbacks are the only things from Origins that still count.
Absolutely.
So all the major plot points from Origins are gone now, right?
None of that occurred, yes.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me.
So yeah, now the Stryker stuff all makes sense, Aaron, because it never happened.
Yeah.
So now it makes perfect sense.
Makes complete sense.
Let's just go through and talk about all the shit that drove me nuts before we talk about the stuff I enjoyed. Here's an important question. How is Professor Xavier alive after the events of X-Men The Last Stand? Never explained. Ever. He's just alive, everybody.
I think it's been alluded to that he had a twin, like a brain-dead twin.
Who is also apparently paralyzed like he is.
Right, that he mind-leapt into. I think that's what happened.
Right, but that it was never, ever touched upon. It was almost as if that movie that he was in where he died never happened. Hmm. Which, by the way, irks me. I hate that movie. I don't like it. I don't like X-Men 3 The Last Stand. I think there are some parts in it that were, you know, good, as there is in any movie pretty much, but for the most part, I thoroughly dislike that movie. But the thing that irks me is that you're doing an X-Men movie, and Patrick Stewart is playing Professor X, and it occurs after the events of that third movie, and they just... Because I'm a continuity nerd, and they're just like, fuck that last movie. And I'm like, no, think of something, right. You lazy ass.
Like, how the fuck is he sitting here right now?
It's comic books. Just make up a reason. Make up something. But they didn't, and I hated that.
Well, I mean, they still could, right, in future movies. They could say something.
I suppose.
There's well, why? No way. None of this ever happened, so why? Yeah. You don't need to touch upon it anymore.
Shit. Yeah, exactly.
Here's another question that can be asked. Why aren't Wolverine's claws still bone in the future? Because, as we know, his adamantium claws were chopped off in the Wolverine, and they should have been bone, yet in the future they are metal again?
They probably infused some extra stuff. I think being friends with Magneto, he could have, you know, put some stuff on there.
Yeah, I know.
I think the Mystique Striker is the one who's going to take him and re-adamant, you know what I mean?
For some reason, yeah.
Yeah.
That we can't quite explain. We know why Striker originally did it. Why Mystique would do it? No fucking clue.
Continuity, man.
That doesn't make any sense, obviously, but... the thing that irked me here as well. I know apparently Kitty Pryde is obviously the one who travels back in time in the books.
Yep.
And she has this ability or something. However, Kitty Pryde did appear in X2 and X3 and could only move through objects. And now all of a sudden in this movie, she has the ability to transport people back in time.
Well, this is also like, 14 years in the future. So just like with Charles Xavier's powers, they also evolved. So,
I suppose that, but it feels so shit. Like, if you watch, like, you're like, I'm going to marathon these movies. Why anybody would want to watch X-Men 3 again, I don't know, but maybe there's people that are like, let's fucking marathon these movies. And then all of a sudden there's a person in there that just has an ability they didn't have before. Is that kind of like how Rogue de-evolved to not be able to fly or have super strength, but have the touchy power?
Dude, you're talking about movies where there's a blue lady who can turn into other people.
It's fake, Cody. I understand that.
I mean,
I don't mind it. I know it's fake. Just don't make it bullshit. Like, automatically, the second they show Charles Xavier sitting there, it's like, how? And then nothing.
I mean, for me, unfortunately, that blows, because sometimes I'll see something and I'll just be like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, they don't say anything. Yeah. You know what? But you're right, though. A lot of people could say an important question is, aren't you just nitpicking? Can you enjoy the film? Why does any of this even matter? It doesn't entirely matter. It's just irksome stuff. And as I stated in the review, it didn't stop my enjoyment of the movie, but it's stuff that really kind of stood out. Like, I'd say one of the biggest characters in the movie who died in a movie and you don't explain why he's still alive is a little strange. You know what I mean? He's a big fucking character. It's not like some minor character. I mean, that's kind of a big thing.
I love the fact, too, how they just say, like, well, what happened to Banshee? And, you know, oh, they're all dead. It's like, what?
By the way, what happened to them? By the way,
I mean,
somebody did make an interesting point where they're like, if you watch the post-credits scene, which is cool, by the way, at the end of The Wolverine, they're like... Professor X and Magneto approach Wolverine or whatever in the airport, and they're like, we need your help, which clearly felt like a lead-in to this movie, but obviously that event that happened took place a long time before the events we see in this. This felt like a good 10 or 20 years after that post-credit
scene.
Yeah,
when the fuck did that happen? Wow.
That just seemed weird, right? Like, we need your help.
Damn it, Tony. I forgot all about that. Shit.
Well, I mean, like, maybe when they needed their help, they're like, Magneto's cat's stuck in a tree. Can you help get it out? You know, maybe that's what they meant. I don't know.
Well, I mean, they show the Sentinels, like, obviously they know the problem is coming.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I get it. That's very nitpicky stuff, but some of that felt very, like, standout-ish. Like, even me, I'm not a huge X-Men fan, and that stuff you know, I own the movies and I do casually watch them, but I don't, you know, I don't diagram, you know, I don't diagram them out. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, if you want to get really technical, you can say that Xavier, the thing with him being alive is explained. You just have to watch the end credit scene at, on The Last Stand.
Right. And you have to, in your head, determine that it was a clone of Xavier who also cannot walk.
Right.
No mobility. I mean, those are things you have to add.
I think what they didn't show you is that as all these clones came, like, woke up as they were walking, Xavier mentally broke their spines one at a time, just took them off to the hospital. That way, you know, they were all ready to go.
You know, honestly, I think if they had just explained the Professor X thing, I would have been happy. Because everything else is minor, but that felt like a major thing. Like, why would you just kind of gloss over that? But I get it. X3 sucked, so let's just forget about it. I get that. I really do, but I'm a nerd for that sort of thing. Glenn, let's try to talk about stuff we enjoyed from this movie.
Well, Bryan Singer, I think he just was like, well, I'm making this X-Men movie, so I'm going to make this movie take place with all the movies I wrote and all the movies I had a hand in, right. And I'm going to ignore X3, and I'm going to ignore Origins, because they've already said that, like, Origins, they are not going to pay attention to at all. It is...
Which is good.
That didn't happen.
Right.
It's just kind of a shitty omission. Like, they should really put that on their posters. Don't count X-Men Origins and anything ever again. So
we won't, don't worry.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good moments in it.
I do like the fact that they pretty much just gave Brett Ratner the high hard one by saying, your piece of shit movie doesn't count anymore.
Literally the only thing from X3 that is in this movie is young Xavier going into Wolverine's mind. And he sees the moment where he kills Jean Grey. And that's the only thing from that movie that appears, I believe. I'm not sure.
Kelsey Grammer and...
Well, yeah, okay. Kelsey Grammer does appear as Beast at the very end. There is that. So, yeah, that counts, I suppose. Those are the only two things. Those are the only two things. This movie is like 70, I want to say what, 85%? First class sequel. They spend the majority of the film with those characters. In fact, I thought they kind of criminally underused Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen. It just felt like they got so little time. Like, they gave Halle Berry like one line, and I'm like, that's good. That's about all I needed from that. And, you know, Kitty Pryde got a few lines, which is fine, and Iceman got a couple of lines. And obviously, you know, Patrick Stewart and... not like Iceman getting some lines was important.
Iceman's lines were him getting decapitated in the most inventive, horrific ways ever.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was like they watched Jurassic Park, The Lost World, and they're like, that's how we're going to kill Colossus. He is going to get ripped in half by two robots.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was cool. I mean, they killed pretty much everybody at the end except for... Patrick Stewart and Kitty Pryde and Wolverine. Essentially, everybody else died. So if you want to see Halle Berry get killed and chucked by a giant sentinel, this is the movie for you, because it occurs for sure. But James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender obviously stole the show. They were awesome. Those guys are fucking great. I cannot get enough of either of them. They're both really good. Hugh Jackman, I thought, Glenn, was really good in this. I think he works better. Like, I think Wolverine works better in groups than he does in the solo movies.
Yeah, he was good. As like, it was kind of weird that, like, as the events happen in the end and he gets thrown in the water, mm-hmm. where, like, yeah, he's important, but he's really unimportant.
Right.
Kind of like Quicksilver. Like, I can't believe they just got rid of him in the first act.
No,
like,
he
was so enjoyable. Oh, yeah, he's, like, way too OP for the story.
Well,
like,
maybe so Magneto banged their mom during the events of X-Men Origins.
They referenced it.
Mom met a guy who could
metal,
metal. And he's like, huh? And then it shows her watching the TV with her son, and she's like, holy shit, that's a guy I had sex with. Like, it was definitely that moment happened. But, like, when he's watching the TV, like, why wouldn't he run over there to help? He just felt, like, really underused.
Yeah, I want to talk about that for a quick second. Obviously, Evan Peters looked absolutely ridiculous. Like, the outfit, I thought, looked so dumb. That being said, his only real scene in the movie completely stole the whole movie. I don't know if this is even sacrilege to point out, because a lot of people fucking love the Nightcrawler scene in the Oval Office. But it was on that level of enjoyment for me. This was fucking fantastic. Because, you know, you see him speeding around all over the place, and they do some jokes with him and shit that are funny. But when they do this scene, when they're surrounded and they're trying to break out of the Pentagon, they show it from Quicksilver's perspective. So everything is slowed down, and they show all the shit he has time to do while rescuing everybody. And it's so awesome. He puts on his headphones and plays Time in a Bottle by Jim Croce, which is awesome. And you just see him doing all this other shit, manipulating guards' arms. So when things speed back to normal, he punches himself in the face and he crosses dudes' guns and pokes a dude in the cheek to watch his fucking skin ripple and
moves bullets.
Moves bullets.
I did like that part, yeah.
Moves bullets. I mean, it is so much fun. And it's, yeah, he was great. And then, but it's obvious why he's in. Yeah, I mentioned it's awesome, but it's also annoying. So,
do you think you would liken this movie to how you felt about The Amazing Spider-Man 2? A lot of good stuff, but a lot of bullshit.
I would say there was not nearly as much bullshit as The Amazing Spider-Man 2 had. Most of the bullshit for me was within, you know, a fucked up continuity, which is, you know, there's literally nothing they could do, I think. I mean, they'd have to go to ridiculous levels to try to fix every goddamn problem that existed going into this movie, continuity-wise. Obviously, but to the Quicksilver point, it's really obvious. He would have been so useful later on in the movie that, you know, that's why he was not heard from again. Basically, he would have made their goals too easy to accomplish based on what he did in that scene. He could have very easily, you know, captured Mystique or took Bolivar Trask somewhere safe. It would have been so easy. So essentially, I got annoyed because it fell into the category of, oh, you know, it would be cool in this movie. Let's just do it, you know. But instead, it makes Wolverine and Professor X and Magneto all look like idiots for not thinking of, hey, let's grab the guy who can move so incredibly fast that nobody even knows what happened. We could end this movie before anybody knows it started. You know, unfortunately, he was too cool for the movie. Like, it was just like, we can't use him later on because then we wouldn't have a movie. So yeah, that did suck. It was amazing for what it was, but he had no use in the rest of the movie, which made it kind of sucky. So hopefully they do more. The word is they're going to do more with the Quicksilver character in the Avengers movie. It's more of a role. So, but honestly, even though it's one scene, they have some work to do because that one scene was fucking great. So they do have a bar to live up to. That was awesome. I mean, other than that, I thought, you know, it looked good. The action and shit was great. The performances were all really good. I liked the story for the most part. You know, you're just left with a lot of weird.
Did you do air quotes when you said story just now?
No. I mean, it's not bad. In the review I wrote, the story is strong. Again, if you can forgive the outlying parts of the canon they ignored.
Right.
So, I mean, if you can forget that stuff and just look at it on its own and kind of forget even any of the other movies really exist, you know, then it's actually really good. And then for the most part, I could just, you know, I was like, you know what? I've had it with X3 too. Just fuck it. Just give me what you're going to give me. And ultimately the timeline was rewritten when Wolverine wakes up. Jean is still alive. He goes to Mac on her and Cyclops breaks it up. And, you know, he's like, oh shit, some things never change. You know, so that was cool. Yeah. And we saw, Kelsey Grammer as Beast, obviously. And then right at the end, you know, Professor X goes to, you know, him and Wolverine meet up to essentially discuss everything that's happened since the 1970s, which he no longer remembers. And that's where it kind of ends, except for the post-credit scene, Aaron, which you can now discuss. Tell us about the post-credit scene.
Oh yeah. The apocalypse stuff. They're in Egypt and thousands of people are chanting, En Sabah Nur, and you see, a blue-skinned young man, you know, with his mind, essentially, is what they're implying, building the pyramids.
Yes.
And anyone knows the canon knows that, you know, eventually, you know, he becomes Apocalypse. He's, you know, the X-Men's, you know, big bad, essentially. So it was a good tease. It definitely got me excited, and maybe I'm looking too far into this, but I couldn't help but focus on the four people on horseback behind him. Like, they'll be his four horsemen of the apocalypse, like in the comic books also. So it, there was a lot of good teasers there. It's, I'm excited just to see, you know, there was a lot of bullshit, you know, maybe once this movie comes out in 2 years, my heart will have healed enough to forgive like the stuff they overlooked and just dive right in. Like, okay, you know, it's going to be like in the '80s, they're fighting apocalypse. Let's, you know, let's sit down and just see what happens. So it's definitely one of the better post credits teases I think we've seen to date, from, you know, any movie franchise in the past 10 years or so.
Well, I mean, Glenn, would you agree? It's a really well-made movie, right?
Yeah. And, like you said about Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, they're kind of like in Spider-Man, a lot of wasted moments. Like, whenever they're having the fight, and you know, like at the end, and you're doing the fucking stupid ass Star Wars duel fight scenes because we got to show that it's heightened in both situations or whatever.
Yeah.
And as they're fighting, then, like, you know, in the future, they're reconciling everything they've done. Like, they really should have expanded on that, because that could have been such a good moment.
Absolutely.
And the fact that it's just like, man, we wasted a lot of time. Yeah, we did. Shake hands. Like, they could have fed on that so much more, you know, something like in Hannibal, which is opposite situation. But, you know, I mean, it was...
Right.
That was a gut-wrenching season finale.
Oh, my God. That last 15 minutes. Holy shit.
But they could have done something like that, and it felt like they kind of wasted some of the... like you said, they wasted the talent of Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
Let me see here.
If I may say something real quick about that post-credit scene.
Sure.
Because I was able to catch it before it was taken down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Aaron... mentioned briefly there about the four horsemen coming up over that dune, man. That was, I mean, if you're familiar kind of with the general story of all the stuff with apocalypse,
yeah,
they play a pretty big part, and I'm really excited. I hope that they do this in the movie where we're going to get, you know, Archangel, you know, with the metal wings as one of the horsemen. Wolverine at one point was one of the horsemen. So I think there's a lot of cool stuff that they could do with that I hope we get to see.
Oh, and we should note that Rogue is, in fact, in the movie for the absolute briefest of moments. It's after Wolverine wakes up in the new timeline, and he's kind of wandering through the school trying to get his bearings, and he's just, you know, seeing people left and right, and he sees Bobby, and the door opens, and Rogue comes out, and she's holding his hand, and they look at each other, and then they, you know, walk away. She smiles at him or whatever, and they walk away. That is literally all Rogue has in this movie, so...
And it makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, her powers, she probably would have been one of the first ones to die. Sorry.
Absolutely.
So I completely understand her not being in the future, because, she would have died.
Well, unless she evolved like Kitty Pryde so she could fly and use super strength. But right. No. Speaking of that, the
extra... Don't they have her face on one of the posters? And she literally was just there for like fucking 2 seconds?
Just that at the very end of the movie. She had as much to do as Kelsey Grammer did in this movie, for sure.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, I liked him as Beast, by the way. I thought he was good. What was I going to say? I don't remember now. Overall, you know what? It's good. It's mostly saved by how great the first class cast is. And by that, I mostly mean Fassbender and McAvoy. But Nicholas Holt was fine, but, you know, he wasn't given a ton to do. Obviously, we completely glossed over J-Law, of course. She was good, too. It totally feels like they want to try to build the franchise around her.
Oh, yeah.
Is that why she had the good guy turn at the end there a little bit? Because she was not a bad guy at the end of this movie, I got the feeling, really.
Well, I mean, she does kidnap Wolverine and probably embeds metal into him.
Well,
so.
as far as we know, but I mean, she could have killed Trask at the end and then opted not to.
They definitely know who the most famous one of the bunch is, and they're gonna stick to that. Which I don't blame them. I mean, that's
trying to get that Hunger Games money, son.
I would be more pissed if she wasn't talented, but, you know, luckily she's very talented. So
she looks the way she does. Let's be honest about that.
Oh yeah, yeah, she's easy on the eyes for sure.
Shit, yeah. I just rewatched Silver Linings Playbook last night.
Just low on the parts where she cries.
She's just fun to watch. Do things.
Let me see here. Let's talk quickly about the box office. Let's see here. Let's go to number five. Aaron's favorite film of the summer, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, fell two places, man. It was number three last week. It's now number five. And it dropped another 53% down to 7.8 million.
Jesus.
It made 7.8 million this weekend, which currently, you know, they're thanking their lucky stars they've got a foreign audience, because the domestic audience is only making 27% of its worldwide gross. It's it's almost at 700 million worldwide, and almost all of that is because of foreign box. It did not do particularly well here.
Man, they cannot be happy about that.
It's got to be the word of mouth, I would presume. But
yeah,
Neighbors fell quite a bit. It fell from number two to number four, but it didn't drop that much. Only 44% from last week. Did 13.9, which is not bad.
Oh, man.
Wasn't that pretty much the budget?
The budget was around 18. Yeah,
it's at 113 million. Yeah, they did just
sure
fine.
They're doing all right.
Yeah. Almost 200 million worldwide.
Wow.
So, blended.
Just for that Neighbors movie?
Yeah.
Fuck. I mean, it looked funny. It looked really funny, but $200 million? That's crazy.
Seth Rogen is back, ladies and gentlemen. Let me see here. Blended opened at number three with, 14.2 million. Now don't get me wrong here. Blended looks like it should have cost what Neighbors cost. But instead, apparently, the budget for Blended was $40 million. I'm guessing about... That's the Sandler-Barrymore movie. So I'm guessing, what, $30 million of that is Sandler's pay?
Gotta be. The other 10 goes to Barrymore for sure.
The rest of it was just shot on cameras.
How much did it make this weekend?
It opened to 14.2 million.
Ooh.
15% on Rotten Tomatoes. Man, that movie is so good.
Godzilla took a bit of a plummet. I mean, it dropped to number two, obviously, and it lost 66%, which is usually a big drop. Fortunately for them, it opened so huge that their big drop is what a normal drop is for most movies. It dropped 66%, but still made $31.4 million in week number two.
Can I read what they say about Blended?
Oh, please.
Oh, sure. Oh, wait, before you run into that real quick, by the way, the worldwide for Godzilla right now in its second week is $315 million.
Oh, my God.
So there
That's you go. Good. Lurching between slapstick and schnaltz, without showing much of a commitment to either, Blended commits the rare Sandler sin of provoking little more than boredom.
Wow.
Whoa,
That's a rare sin? I mean, that's been happening.
I think that was one of the fresh ratings, too, that sounds like.
That was one of the positive reviews.
It was one of the positive ones.
Fuck you guys.
And
Cody's over there jerking off on his Grown Ups 1 and 2 box set.
I thought Cody said he did not like the Grown Ups movies.
I wasn't a huge fan of them, though. But I do like Adam Sandler.
No, I mean, I like Adam Sandler, too. And I especially liked him when he started branching out and doing some of the dramatic roles. I thought he was fine in a lot of those. Punch Drunk Love, I really liked.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that, but Rain Over Me he was good in.
Oh, I really liked Rain Over Me too. I thought he was good in that.
Spanglish.
I have not seen Spanglish.
It's weird.
Speaking of, actually, we're not speaking of Spanglish at all. But hey, number one at the box office. Surprise, surprise. Was X-Men: Days of Future Past. It did not do the Godzilla number, but it did a incredibly respectable 90.7 million opening weekend. That is not too shabby. I think people were projecting that it was going to do over 100, but it fell just shy of that. But that's all right. Combine that with the foreign box office right now, and it's sitting about 261 million plus. So it's doing well. It is doing okay, for sure. Opening this coming weekend, let me see here. What do we got that's wide? I think it's only two wide releases, but I could be wrong. There's Filth is coming out, but that's a limited art house release.
I would recommend anyone to go see that.
Filth?
Yes.
You're like, just in general, not just this movie, just go watch filthy movies?
No, well, yeah, just in general, Filth is amazing, but especially featuring Mr. James McAvoy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's excellent, of course.
Yeah, he's amazing.
The two big wide releases, Maleficent is opening this weekend. That's Angelina Jolie, the great Charlton Copley, of course. I love him. Elle Fanning is in this. Let me see here.
That movie will probably make some coin.
Oh, I'm sure it will. Yeah, yeah. Isn't this that's the Sleeping Beauty movie, right?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
As the storybook expert, I will confirm that it's definitely Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, you wear that badge proud, sir.
I was just thinking the same thing.
You know what? We got Frozen coming next year on Once Upon a Time, so.
There you go, man.
Yeah, you're such a cool man.
Are they really going to do the Disney Frozen on a live-action TV show?
Yeah, it's happening.
They're going to take, wow. They're going to take, I mean, that's what they do, man. They take
do they sing the songs and all that stuff, too?
I don't know. I mean, she just walked out of a bottle and started shooting ice everywhere coming to town, so I don't know what's going to happen as far as singing goes.
Shit's going to get real. And by the way, don't make fun of Glenn. He knows the show is ridiculous. He just got caught up in it. I don't blame him. I get caught up in stupid shit all the time.
It's not like I watch wrestling or anything.
Absolutely. Or this podcast, for that matter. I get caught up in this all the time, and this show is ridiculous.
But, I mean, if you were on the edge of middle age and had a couple of children, it'd be a lot easier to forget.
That being said, I watch cartoons all the time as an adult with my kids not in the room whatsoever. I can't stop watching that fucking Star Wars animated show on.
God, I know.
I can't stop watching it, man. I don't know. And that is technically Disney now, I guess, because they own fucking everything Star Wars. The other wide release is, of course, A Million Ways to Die in the West. I am looking forward to this because I fucking love Ted and I like Seth MacFarlane, who is in this movie.
Looks really funny.
With Charlize Theron, Amanda Seyfried, Neil Patrick Harris, Giovanni Ribisi, Liam Neeson's cock, Sarah Silverman. that's how he's referred to from now on, everybody.
Can you back up?
Neil Patrick Harris?
To the Liam Neeson part?
Apparently,
you say his cock.
Yeah, Liam Neeson's cock is in this.
Do you have insider information that I'm not aware of? Or what's going on?
That's a big thing. Well, no pun intended. I was actually brought up years ago on when Craig, I don't know if he still does it, but when Craig Ferguson did The Late Show, he was talking to someone he had brought up. It's like, I had always heard that Liam Neeson, he isn't
he isn't
hurting down there. And like, yeah. And I guess it was like in Rob Roy, when he comes out of the water, like the whole cast and crew and like Jessica Lange were like, holy shit.
Yeah, Liam Neeson's cock is so big it gives R.L. Stein goosebumps.
Oh my goodness gracious!
By the way,
does he show his wiener again in this movie, or that's just what we're gonna call him and just talk about his monster?
Well, you know, at the beginning of this, at the beginning of the movie is where the screen is dark for a second before the credits fade in. That's when his cock is actually in the movie. You just can't see it because it is blocked out the entire view of the camera. Ewan McGregor, according to all cast listings, is in this movie, but just as a random guy. It says Ewan McGregor, cowboy at fair. And here's the one that I've triple checked because it made me shit my pants because I have not seen it, and I guess it's a spoiler for the movie. But Christopher Lloyd is in this movie playing, and I quote, Doc Brown.
Have you not? Seen
oh, that's
oh,
awesome!
My God.
You not see the trailer? Like they show
I haven't seen it. No, I didn't see it. Really, is he wearing like the Doc Brown shit from?
Yeah, because he's like trying to hide the DeLorean and Seth MacFarlane's
What
are you doing in here? It's like weather experiment.
What
trailer is this?
That's got to be quick because I didn't see that.
Yeah, I didn't see that either.
Is that like the unrated trailer or something? Or
it's the trailer that I saw on IMDb, and I've seen in theaters like twice.
Well, we're gonna end the podcast. We can all go and watch that trailer right now.
Well, not before I find Liam Neeson's cock, because Google is not helping me out on this
at
all.
Go to Neeson. Go to NeesonCock.com.
Oh, okay.
It's just a series of the jokes that Cody was just telling. Absolutely. Liam Neeson's cock is so big that when he comes, clowns come out. So
no, but I mean, I want to see this monster.
I'm not sure if it's ever been on film. Has it?
I thought
it was on film in Rob Roy, wasn't it?
They don't actually show it. But it's like there's a part coming out of the water, and they do like a behind the scenes shot. When someone was on Late Show, they had talked about like when he did that. They were like, "Holy shit! Like that guy is."
Delete that browser history before the next person sees Liam Neeson big time. Yeah.
It's legendarily huge. We should probably close out the podcast though for this week.
Just end with a mouthful of Liam Neeson's big cock. Is that what we're going on?
Everything we've talked about with the exception of the Wang of Liam Neeson, can be found at cinemageekly.com.
If I can find it, it's going on the site, I tell you that.
Of course, not just cinemageekly.com, but cinemageekly.com/support. There you can find out everything you need to know about helping keep the website and the podcast free and helping us with the out-of-pocket expenses. It's all welcome, and we thank everybody for engaging. Don't forget, first three people to send in emails to info@cinemageekly.com. are going to be entered for a possible $25 gift card from Fandango. One of these three fine co-hosts will attempt to use their cinema knowledge to help win you that gift card. So we shall find out next week.
And I think our team name is going to be the Liam Neeson Big Cocks.
Okay. Of course, you can reach out to us social media-wise. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, YouTube, Tumblr, Instagram. You name it, we got it. All easy to find, all at Cinema Geekly. Of course, I already dropped the email. Other than just trying to get your name in there for the gift card, you can, of course, send your love letters, hate mail, questions, your inquiries. And we will discuss them on a future show. That is a guarantee, because once the summer runs out, we are going to have nothing to talk about whatsoever for a good stretch of time.
Oh, I'm pretty sure we can get at least three episodes out of Liam Neeson.
We will need you. Glenn, is there another Flip for Side B coming sometime soon?
Well, there was supposed to be one this week until it decided to be a corrupted file. Happened.
That happens.
So I'll have to touch on the last two episodes of Hannibal before talking about the finale. I think it was 32 minutes long, so it'll probably be like a 10-minute preview kind of thing to lead to what was one of the best season finales of any show ever. Because
people were talking about it all over the place. Yeah. I have to check this show out, because, I mean, it made a lot of buzz.
It was that episode. Amazing.
And if you have, like, a topic or something you want us to talk about, like he said, just send an email.
Yes.
And I think I have a Buffy one that I'll be able to do. I really think that's going to happen.
Oh,
so
amazing.
You're welcome, America. And UK and Philippines.
Absolutely. All right. We're gonna head on out of here, but of course, do all of those things that everyone already suggested, and then some. And follow Aaron on Twitter. He's going nuts. He won't stop talking about it.
I got my good close personal friend Mark Millar following me on Twitter now, so fuck the rest of you.
There you go, man. That's all he needs. That's his one follower. Aaron's gonna go on a quest to remove all of the other followers and just have the one.
I wouldn't go that far, but okay, I mean, well, you know,
we won't go that far.
My best friend Mark Millar will be just fine on the Twitter.
Well, I'll be fine with my best friend Joey Bat. So,
hell's yeah, still following the Cinema Geekly Twitter.
Good on him.
You should fucking come over to the Tigers at the trade deadline. We could use the help.
Shh, man,
I know it sounds fucking. That's like double first world problems, because we're still a fucking first place team and got like the second.
I know.
But fuck it. We lost like five out of our last six games. We're in trouble.
Oh, what a stretch. Jesus.
Get Joey Bats over here, everybody. I don't even know how good he's playing this season, but he's following us. So
his penis as a bat.
I was going to say, yeah, he's following us, so I'm assuming it's awesome.
Yeah, if he wants to hit all of the home runs.
Absolutely. Spoken like a true baseball fan, Cody. He will hit all of the home runs. All right, let's get the hell out of here. For Aaron De La Osa, Cody Kelly, and Glenn Bove, I'm Anthony Lewis, and we will be back next week on the Cinema Geekly Podcast.